Welcome to the 172nd episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome, and thanks for listening. It's hot and humid here, even hotter and humid than I think last week. It's just something, you know, you have to slow down your pace because your heart rate goes up with the humidity. I run with my dogs every morning in case you're kind of new to the podcast, and I can tell, you know, they just really don't like it. They're looking for the turn home as soon as we can. So we're down to about just a little less than 4 miles a day with them at the break of dawn before they're tired. So my training partners, you know, I get about 4 miles in with the dogs as far as my running. And then a lot of days I head to the treadmill to do some hill climbing because I'm getting ready for Ironman Chattanooga. So I'm doing some hill repeats and some kind of long, slow hill runs at this point. I'm still doing my weight training as well as swimming and biking. And I've added more mobility into my training. I had a visit last week with a posture specialist and a trainer, and she did an assessment because we're going to have her come to the office and for our nutrition classes and for our members do an assessment of posture. Because, you know, as I sit here doing this podcast, and I promise my trainer, if she's listening, I'm not hunched over my desk, but we tend to fall into our chairs. Office chairs can be really nasty. You know, they're not really made for any kind of good posture for the most part. And half the time at my office, my dog is underneath the desk, and so I'm leaning over, and so it's nasty. And one thing leads to another, and over time, your posture, you know, you get bent in all the wrong ways. So I had an assessment, and, you know, I've been doing some mobility work to try to release my hips, and, you know, I roll on a foam roller and try my best, but I kind of flunked my posture examination on multiple levels. And from, you know, mobility in my lower legs and my hips and my lats and my shoulders. And the worst part about it, when I saw the photos and saw myself leaning backwards, so my thoracic spine is behind my lumbar spine, so it's very unstable. And I was shown a demonstration of an African woman carrying a big bucket on her head, and how nice and straight she was. And the trainer pointed out that I couldn't do that because, you know, it'd break my back because my spine is so, you know, my thoracic spine is so much behind my lumbar spine. And I was kind of mortified, you know. Brought to mind, you know, when I see, you know, older gentlemen with beer bellies, you know, walking in the mall, it's like, oh my God, that's, you know, I'm kind of lined up that way right now. Obviously, I was given exercises and some release work to do to try to get myself straightened up and some posture cues to try to straighten myself up. So I've been doing that. And actually, the first day out running, you know, when I was concentrating on getting my thoracic spine back over my my pelvis and my lumbar spine, I was running easier, you know, go figure. And actually, it's like, well, this is kind of worth it now. When I first heard the news, you know, of how messed up I am, I didn't take it all that good. It's like, well, you know, everybody's built, you know, everybody gets bent certain ways, and I'm not that bad. And, you know, I don't know if I have time to add, you know, more things to my plate as far as what, you know, trying to fix myself. Is it going to be worth it and everything? And I did a little bit of feeling sorry for myself on the way home. And then it kind of hit me, you know, just like the light bulb does hit me, is that it's kind of what I do to my patients day in and day out. You know, I assess what's wrong with them and tell them all the bad things that are wrong with them and what they need to do. And then they come back and it's like, yeah, that's good, but you need to do this. And so I kind of got a dose of my own medicine. And I wrote a blog post about it. You can check out the website at drdelaney.com. But a couple of my patients actually called me after I wrote the blog post. I didn't think I was whining quite that much or sounded like I was on the ledge, so to speak. But it really was eye-opener for me. to understand a little bit more of, you know, just what people feel when they're given the news that they have something wrong with them, a lifestyle disease, and they need to make these drastic changes. And they're not sure if they want to, or they have time to, or how they're going to go about it. And it can be a little bit overwhelming at first. So, you know, if nothing more comes out of it than this, which I hope it does, you know, I'm a little bit more empathetic to what my patients hear when they come to my office. And it was funny because today, I do a master swim class, and in master swim class, the instructor was also pointing out, my hand entry is, you know, wrong. Both, one worse than the other. And, you know, rotation could be better. And it's like, oh man, you know, another set of flaws here today that I got to work on. And it's like, oh, you know, when am I going to get this right? And it seemed like everything, you know, was just kind of crawling through mud this week a little bit. It's trying to, you know, get myself so that, you know, I had my act together, I guess, you know, between my posture and my swimming and my hand position, it's a little difficult. It reminded me, I used to be a golfer many moons ago, and I could really pick apart a golf swing and, you know, where you're positioning. And there's so many things to learn when you're golfing, and where your hands are and where the club is and generating club head speed and your hips, your follow through and all this kind of stuff. And swimming is a lot like that. If your timing is off, you really kind of stop yourself in the water. So when you start concentrating on a bunch of different things, you know, sometimes it becomes a little bit frustrating, and you kind of have to pick one thing at a time, I guess, to look into it. But nevertheless, I'm going to keep at it and keep practicing. I'm also practicing, you know, people, again, listened before, they know that I'm trying to learn the butterfly stroke. And so I keep practicing that, and different things go wrong each time. But, you know, gradually it's getting a little bit better. And, you know, who knows, by the time I'm 80, I might be able to do the butterfly with some ease. I don't know. But the other thing that was funny, driving to swim practice at 6 a.m., I go by a McDonald's, and I looked over and I saw, it's just like a line of cars coming out of there, you know, and I thought, my God, if they've got to, you know, you have to go to McDonald's to get yourself started at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I assume there'll be coffee involved, but whatever, you know, the greasy stuff is, you know, how these people must just tank an hour or so after they eat this greasy, you know, vasoconstricting type food. And I felt really bad. You know, I was going to go swimming, and when I do come home from swimming, I feel really good and I have fruit. And these people are just going to be sick all morning from eating that stuff. And, you know, it leads into as well as that the data's out for life expectancy for the world's population. And we're down around 27, 28 behind Croatia and South Korea, despite, you know, all our testing and all our preventative medicine. And almost 80% of the people in the United States don't get the adequate amount, just the RDA, which is not even great, of 4 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. 80% people don't get it. And it's like, well, those people at McDonald's weren't getting it. You know, I mean, I guess somebody's probably going to try to count potatoes or the French fries or hash browns in the orange juice as a vegetable. Maybe they do. I don't know. I hope not. But it's you know, they're behind the eight ball. Those people also weren't getting any fiber in this morning. So they're going to be behind as getting their fiber in, behind, you know, obviously the fruits and vegetables. And obviously on the high end of the salt and fat intake, and it's just a setup for a disaster for the rest of the day. In class today, I have level 3 nutrition class on Friday, so these are my people that have taken the most nutrition classes. And if you're a member of the practice, we have classes available through the membership at no extra charge on a weekly basis. So some people have taken 4 and 5 different sessions. And so they're my stars as far as nutrient-dense people, for the most part. Some are still struggling a little bit. And, you know, the great part about the class is that, you know, people are there to help out and give suggestions. But we talked about, you know, we went around the room and took a survey on what fruit people had to eat yesterday. And I was glad to find out that most people in the room, actually everybody in the room, had 4 to 5 at least different fruits the day before. You know, we didn't check for today, but the day before. And, you know, most of that, you know, is serving of fruit for the most people. So I thought that was really, really good. I do have people that, you know, tell me they're terrified of fruit because of the sugar. And people are terrified of the sugar that they think is going to cause cancer or make their cancers grow. And they're terrified of the sugar in fruit because they think it's going to make their diabetes worse. And, you know, it's so funny when you think about it in the context of the, you know, sentence I just said. So people go to McDonald's at 6 o'clock in the morning and get these terrible, terrible meals, but they're afraid of eating fruit for what it could do to their cancer or their sugars. Not that my nutrition people go to McDonald's, but the people that are terrified of fruit generally are not eating a fully plant-based diet. And so, you know, we have to talk to them. It's not the fruit that they're eating. You know, there's a study done that the diabetics kept their calories up so they didn't lose weight, ate 17 pieces of fruit a day, and their glucose control got better. They lost weight. Their insulin levels decreased. A lot of people were able to stop their insulins, you know, altogether. And when I say that, I'm going to take it back. They did not lose weight because the idea was to keep their calories, so they didn't lose weight. But their glucose control got better, their insulin requirements decreased, and a lot of people actually eliminated their insulin levels. So it's the fat that you're eating, and it may be the fat at breakfast. So if you have McDonald's, we're going to pick on McDonald's today. I'm sorry, but Ronald, but here it goes. If you have, you know, a sausage egg McMuffin, and then at lunch you have a bowl of fruit, your sugar's going to spike, and it's not going to spike because of that bowl of fruit. It's going to spike because of all the oil you put in your system and the fat from that sausage egg McMuffin that's blocking the uptake of glucose into your muscle cell. So that fat's just laying there like fat in the bottom of a drain. And it's not letting that glucose from the fruit go into your muscles. In the same way, as far as cancer goes, you know, we're talking, when we talk about cancer and, you know, certainly rapidly turning over cells take up glucose better than not rapidly turning over cells. But it doesn't mean that they're stimulated by the growth of, so if you give them fat, doesn't mean that they can't grow. It just means that they metabolize glucose better. But it's more along the line when we're talking simple sugars, you know, white table sugar or agave or maple syrup even. Those sugars that are processed that is being able to take up is going to go to those cells to make it go a little bit, you know, a little bit faster. But again, these cells are growing faster anyway. So we want to give, you know, we want to give antioxidants and phytonutrients that actually stop the growth of cancer or slow things down by helping the body repair, helping the body's immune system to become better. And so when you're eating fruit, you're giving your body antioxidants and immune boosting nutrients so that you can actually stop the growth of cancer, stop DNA damage, stop the proliferation of abnormal DNA. So fruit is fine in the context of cancer, and certainly eat a lot of it. And it's fine in the context of diabetes, and it's fine in the context of Alzheimer's. We know that simple sugars lead to inflammation and inflammatory process in the brain, but not in the context of, again, when we eat this whole fruit that has all these nutrients and antioxidants in it, that's actually protective. And our body runs on the glucose, and our body is able to use the glucose without the interference of fat when you get that outside of your body. So don't be terrified of fruits. Please eat those. Be terrified of the fat and fast foods and things that come out of a box window. Those are the things that be terrified. I had an interaction with a new member that told me her story this week, and I felt bad being part of the medical community again for our lack of empathy sometimes. This person had breast cancer, young, so it was shocking to get the breast cancer diagnosis, as if any of you listeners have had that diagnosis. It was an aggressive form of breast cancer, so she was told that she needed chemotherapy, an aggressive form, and so they did an echocardiogram before, and her heart function was normal. And, you know, there's this a quick, you know, you need this really bad or you're going to not do well. So, you know, you say yes to the chemotherapy. And, yeah, there's side effects, but, you know, they're kind of brushed off, like we do as physicians. You know, it could happen, but it probably won't happen to you. And lo and behold, she did get the side effect from the chemotherapy of a cardiomyopathy. So her heart function, the muscle itself became very, very weakened. And all of a sudden, you know, out of the blue, she's short of breath and she can't breathe. And now she goes and sees another set of doctors. And, you know, they start her on a whole, you know, fistful of cardiac medications. And that makes her feel bad. But you've got to take them because this is, you know, this is what the guidelines say to do for people with heart failure. You have to take all these different medications. And, you know, they made those medications made her feel poorly as well. And, you know, when you, things were happening so fast to her, she never really got to take a breath. Of, you know, just one diagnosis that led to treatment that led to another diagnosis that led to treatment that, you know, is going to lead to another procedure. And at no time was she told that nutrition could play a role, but she was threatened that if she didn't take these medications, that her life expectancy would be significantly shortened to the point where they, you know, they put a date on her life expectancy, which, you know, the first thing, nobody can put a date on your life. If somebody tells you you only have so many months to live, you know, nobody has, believe me, they don't pass out eight balls in a medical school so you know when people are going to die. So, you know, right up front, I think that's really cruel. That's taking hope away from people when it's not ever going to be an accurate statement. You know, so all these things. So she was threatened with, if she didn't take the medicine, bad things were going to happen. And then she took the medicines and bad things happened. But nobody ever told her what she could do to actually help herself or slow the process down enough that she could actually let her body heal from these things. And so I was lucky enough to meet her. And, you know, it's like, I think there's a lot we can do. But we have to, you know, we really have to get your nutrition on board. And one of the things was salt. You know, when I first started the practice of cardiology, you know, my specialty was heart failure. And, you know, sodium was a big thing. It still is a very big thing with regards to heart failure because just a little bit of salt can cause you to retain a lot of water and it makes it so hard for the heart to pump. If it's weak, then it backs up into the lungs and the belly and the abdomen and you can't absorb your medicines and it snowballs and it can snowball very, very quickly. And, you know, just to go over things just a little bit, if you just ate raw fruits and vegetables, you get about 700, 800 milligrams of salt a day. So you're already halfway there to the 1500 milligrams of sodium that the DASH diet recommends for, you know, people to take in. 1500 milligrams of sodium is not even a full teaspoon. It's a 0.75 teaspoon of salt. So 2,300 milligrams is actually a teaspoon of salt. So we don't. So if you get more than, you know, if you get more than a teaspoon of salt in a day, then you're going to be in trouble if you have. It's directly toxic to everybody's blood vessels. But if your heart is weakened, then you're going to you're really going to start to retain fluids and water, and get into trouble. And let's go back to the McDonald's. You know, you go through the drive-in and you're going to get that 2 grams, 3 grams of salt right there. So you already have it, you know, before the day, even, you know, before the sun comes up, you can be really in trouble with regards to fluid. Unfortunately, this person, you know, loved Popeye's chicken and she went there, you know, it's like she couldn't resist. And, you know, that's a big giant salt load. So that's a big no-no. But besides, he's like, well, I know I don't go to McDonald's and I don't go to fast foods. But if you go to, you know, Chili's or any these restaurants, everything is salted. It's pre-salted. Remember, salt is a preservative. Salt gives extra shelf life to things. Even condiments have salt. Depending on what mustard you select, it could be 50 milligrams of salt. It could be 150 milligrams of salt. You know, so if you do soy sauce and ketchup and mustard, you know, you can get into a lot of salt. Then plus the salt that was already put on something. When people shake the salt, you know, how much have you ever measured when you shake the salt shaker? How much salt do you actually get in? I've watched people, you know, and I know that they're getting over the teaspoon of salt when they're actually even using the salt shaker. So you really have to be careful with regards to the amount of sodium that you get in. If you have, and it's like, okay, well, sure, we'll give you water pills, and the water pills will take this, you know, help you get rid of the salt. But you know, when you have these big fluid shifts, that leads to cramping in the legs, and all, you know, electrolyte abnormalities. So one thing leads to another. So you can really, if you're diligent on eating fruits and vegetables and whole grains, and you know, really watching the condiments, you know, little or none, you can really do well and avoid the need for diuretics. So it's something to think about. You know, and it was such a shame in this person that, you know, nobody talked about nutrition, nitric oxide producing vegetables, that we can get more blood flow to her heart, get more blood flow to the rest of her body, weight loss to decrease. You know, when you're overweight, you have to pump blood to your fat cells. And fat cells are very, very vascular. So your heart's really working if you're overweight to pump to where, you know, all the places that don't do you any good. You know, fat doesn't help you get out of a chair or move your body or do anything. It's not only a weight to your skeletal system, it's a big weight to your heart. So achieving a normal body weight is really, really important if you have poor heart function. Fat cells also produce hormones that increase your, you know, the inflammation in your body, and tumor necrosis factor that can help cancer cells grow. People that are overweight are much more at risk of getting cancers and not doing well with their cancer. So it's important to get your weight under control. And, you know, all the different things that you can eat, the cruciferous vegetables, that you can decrease the blood flow to these cancer cells to keep that coming from back. So we're targeting a lot of things on her, you know, both are, it's kind of funny, you know, she was given two different sets of medications. Not funny. She was given two different sets of medications, one for cancer and one for her heart. But we're going to treat her nutritionally with one set of nutrition that is full of antioxidants and phytonutrients and nitric oxide producing chemicals to help her get better and get her immune system under control, get the inflammation out of her body, get her weight where it should be, so that her body functions at the optimal level. And that's all done with nutrition. You know, the medications, you know, can go by the wayside for the most part. But, you know, it's such a sad thing that people aren't, that should be part of the therapy. And it always should be part of your therapy. There's never, you know, there's not a disease out there that won't be benefited by good nutrition. You know, other podcasts give me things to talk about. And I learn things from other podcasts that are completely unrelated to nutrition or sports in general. You know, they can, but there are things that apply all over. But one of the interviews that I were listening to, they started talking about supplements, and one of the supplements that they were talking about was glutathione. And people actually get IV infusions of glutathione at health spas. It comes in these liposomes, like oil caplets that people, you know, either try to chug down or swallow. It even comes in suppositories, and it is it's a giant antioxidant. So it's this, you know, powerhouse antioxidant, which it truly is. It's three amino acids: glutamate, cysteine, and glycine. Again, it has a lot of protective properties. And so these people of means are taking these in, you know, and then going about their daily life. It's you can guess who takes this in. It's people like on a ketogenic diet or people on low carb diets, because they're trying to avoid, well, they're trying to get these antioxidants in, because again, when you're eating a high fat, high protein diet, you're generating a lot of free radicals. And you need a lot of antioxidants just to take care of what you're eating, let alone, you know, the other things that happen to your body. So guess what? Guess how you can get glutathione in without taking a suppository or an intravenous form of it. You can have some asparagus or potatoes or peppers or carrots or onions or broccoli, avocados, spinach, tomatoes, grapes, most fruits, apples, oranges, peaches, bananas, melons, all good sources of glutathione. Also, things that people on a ketogenic diet or a low-carb diet wouldn't be coming across for the most part. So, you know, and if you use cumin, it increases the level of the glutathione when you eat these vegetables. So putting, you know, some cumin on your, you know, in your beans or your, you know, on your peppers and squash can actually improve these glutathione levels. Or you can buy it and use a suppository for about $55 for, you know, 30 days. You can buy a lot of organic vegetables for that, you know, so... It's just a sad state of affairs when people abuse their body all day long, but then they think they can take some sort of fat-filled antioxidant and get back to, you know, where they should be, and the rest of the stuff is not gonna hurt. There's again, you know, and we say week in and week out, there's no magic bullet that allows you to go to McDonald's and then you know, eat a sausage egg McMuffin and then come around and eat this stuff and be okay. It's kind of funny that asparagus is really high in glutathione. It's also high in asparagine. And, you know, there was a goofy study that was not very well controlled that looked at breast cancer spread in asparagine. So this vegetable that's, you know, on one hand, high in the best antioxidant in the world was also touted as being something that maybe people should avoid. But eat your asparagus. It's very, very good. Had some today in class. As an example, in class, we made a yellow tomato sauce with tomato and mustard and apple cider vinegar and turmeric and ginger. So loaded with antioxidants. And that mustard helped. And then we sauteed broccoli and asparagus and garlic and served that with quinoa. So the cruciferous vegetables, the broccoli, the anti-cancer power is accentuated when you have mustard seed or mustard powder. And of course, we had mustard in our tomatoes. The vitamin C in the tomatoes help absorb iron from the vegetables and the quinoa. And the tomatoes have lycopene in them, you know, so in the yellow ones, a lot of beta carotene. So this was like a meal that was, you know, chock full of antioxidants and nutrients. So, you know, it was a super, super foods meal that was pretty cheap. You know, we fed 14 people with 6 tomatoes and 2 packs of asparagus and a thing, a head of broccoli. There's still some left over and a cup of quinoa. So, you know, this is not high dollar food to get really high dollar nutrients, you know, or big, you know, big bang for your buck, so to speak. The other thing in the, you know, that's big in the endurance athletes is, you know, to take your branch chain amino acids. And most people don't even know what a branch chain amino acid, but they happen to be one of the essential amino acids, at least the leucine, isoleucine, valine, and proline. But leucine has actually been shown to increase target of rapamycin, which is associated with inflammation and increased cancer rates, just like methionine is. So, you know, again, these... amino acids, people think they're benign, that they're going to build protein. We don't want all of the amino acids in unlimited amounts. You know, when you eat a vegetable, it has just the right amount of amino acids and protein in it at usually levels that our body can really tolerate. When you eat, you know, when we talk about a complete protein, it's the percentages of the essential amino acids in meat. And so, you know, for instance, a banana has the essential amino acids, but in much lower percentages than you would find in meat. But in reality, it's really good. If you, you know, if you talk about leucine, you know, you have to eat heads and heads of cabbage and heads and bags of apples to get the amount of leucine that you would in a serving of turkey. yet it's, you know, the danger is so there's much less danger in having, you know, we don't want a lot of leucine in our diet. So people are, you know, don't take branched chain amino acids thinking that you're going to build this, you know, that you need these things in order to repair your muscles from exercise. Eat the vegetables and fruit and let your body do the rest of it. If we turn our attention to medications that are easily eliminated with a plant-based diet, one is metformin that's used for diabetes. And metformin works by decreasing the liver's ability to make glucose. So it doesn't really do much with the glucose that you take in, but it decreases your liver's production of glucose. And what happens is that typically people are really subject to low glucoses with this medication because if they start to change their diet and their glucose starts to drop because they're taking the fat out of their diet and the drain is becoming unclogged and the glucose starts to go in quickly, they don't have a backup because the liver's blocking the production of glucose. So they have this low because there's there's a sluggish rebound. Typically, when we're out exercising, our liver is putting out some glucose, and we're generating glucose in order to fuel our muscles because we have breakdown of glucose, from our muscles and again our liver, and we have so much glycogen in our system that can be broken down into glucose. But if you're on these drugs, you can't. And so you can get those side effects. You can also get some, other side effects such as explosive diarrhea. And most recently, it's been shown that you increase the activation of certain proteins. They're called phosphorylation proteins, and they actually increase TOR, which is target of rapamycin, which again is associated with increased people that have elevated levels of TOR tend to have are associated with increased breast cancer, prostate cancer. People that are eat a lot of cruciferous vegetables, their TOR levels go down. Fasting, your TOR levels go down. It's an anti-aging type of enzyme. So, but when you're on the metformin, it tends to accentuate that. So, you know, it's another reason to change your diet to a plant-based diet, get the oil out of your system, get the fat out of your body, and you can get off of this medication quite quickly. And get rid of all the side effects. You know, people are starting to take it when they have pre-diabetes. Well, pre-diabetes, again, carries all the same risk for secondary cardiovascular complications as full-blown diabetes because there's increased insulin levels, and the metformin is not going to change that. So, again, plant-based diet, eliminate the need for those medications, and you can just do much better. I had a listener email me that wanted to talk about blood clots and plant-based nutrition. When we talk about polyunsaturated fats, omega-3s and omega-6s, omega-6 polyunsaturated fatty acids actually go to form a clotting mechanism. And obviously, if we don't have clotting mechanisms, we can spontaneous bleed. So we do need to be able to clot our blood. If we fall and hurt ourselves or we bruise ourselves, we need to be able to clot. But if you have excessive intake of omega-6s, then it can lead to excessive clotting. Omega-3s and omega-6s use the same enzyme to go, and omega-3s are kind of the balance out. They decrease clotting, decrease inflammation, where omega-6s go more towards inflammation. So if you have a history of blood clots, you want to make sure you're getting your omega-3 fatty acids. Now, there was a study released this week that showed that taking fish oil supplements for omega-3 fatty acids did nothing as far as stroke or heart attack. And so people say, well, do I need to take these at all? Maybe omega-3 fatty acids aren't important. But, you know, it comes back that most of these studies were looked at fish oil supplements, and they're not regulated. We don't know how much omega-3s that are actually in them. Nobody measured their omega-3 levels. And we know that the interaction, again, with food, whole foods, is where you should get your omega-3 fatty acids. So walnuts and kale and beans, hemp seeds, flax seed, chia seed, that's where you want to get your omega-3s to decrease, excessive clotting, to decrease inflammation. And when people do have blood clots, more traditional therapy was warfarin. And it works, it helps the blood to not clot by mechanisms that involve vitamin K. And so people are told to avoid eating green leafy vegetables because their blood will thicken up. And so we have this group of people that, you know, are unhealthy because they have rhythm problems or they have blood clots. And now we're telling them not to eat nitric oxide producing vegetables that would help their blood flow. So it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But we don't think about that as a medical community. The reality of it is, eat your green leafy vegetables. You may have to take more warfarin or a different anti-coagulating coagulation medication. But even on warfarin, you can just take more of it and eat your greens. So get your 4 to 5 cups of greens a day. And again, you're going to increase your omega-3s, decrease your omega-6s, and be less likely to have recurrent clots. Blood clots are associated with some genetic clotting factor abnormalities, so that, you know, people have to be tested for that. Blood clots are also seen in people that have malignancies, and so sometimes they're not diagnosed, and or they have a cancer. They're at increased risk of again the blood clot formation. So it goes back again to nutrition. If you want to decrease your risk of the cancers or treat the cancers or decrease the growth of the cancers, then eating a whole food plant-based diet rich in antioxidants, rich in omega-3s, rich in green leafy vegetables is going to protect you on all fronts. So it's again, we go back to one way of eating protects you in a multitude of ways that you don't have to take a bunch of supplements for to try to get your antioxidants and phytonutrients. You know, to date, there's not been a supplement that, you know, has come around that has worked as far as decreasing mortality from vascular disease. So, you know, to think that taking, you know, whatever new antioxidant is out there is kind of crazy. So again, spend your money on the plants. If someone tells you that eating plant-based is boring, then chances are they can't come up with very many menus or things to eat and are not well-versed in what to do. And so they need some help. And we give our members a sheet that have a list of the nitric oxide producing greens and a list of beans and a list of vegetables, not all inclusive. Obviously, there are 20,000 vegetables, but the main ones that people know and love, and a list of grains and potatoes. And we have them choose from each column if they want to make a menu. Because sometimes people, they have trouble making the rounded plate. To make sure that they're getting in everything that they need to get in. So I want people to look at their plate first and look for color. So there's, you know, there should be something green and something orange or yellow, hopefully something red on the plate, and maybe more than one, and maybe more than different, you know, different shades of oranges and yellows and reds and greens, and a grain. And then look for a starch. In the old days, you know, people would have a meat and a starch and a single vegetable. So if you start from the single vegetable and the starch, and then you're going to add in, so was then now look for color. So, you know, if you had a green, so if, you know, the old days people, you know, are people that don't think outside the box too much, you know, it might've been green beans and a baked potato. So now what are you going to add? So we want to get something with nitric oxide producing potential. So that would be Swiss chard, beets, broccoli, cauliflower, kale, Swiss, you know, collards, something along those lines, spinach, any kind of cabbage. So that needs to be in there. Typically those are green. So, you know, can we get something, you know, else of color? Your potato might have been a white potato. Maybe, you know, next time make it a purple potato or a sweet potato. Add some beets to the plate. Add some tomatoes to the plate. And then add, you know, or add some beans. Add some kidney beans, red beans, black beans to the plate. So, you know, think about looking at the plate and trying to make sure you have covered the nutrients that you want to get in. We want the nitric oxide producing vegetables. We want a starch, something that's going to give us a lot of fiber in the beans. We do want some protein, but we have protein in everything. But, you know, if you're trying to perhaps build yourself up or recover from an anemia, then want to make sure you have the beans and have the greens. If you're thin, you know, you want to make sure you're getting enough starch to make yourself, you know, to maybe gain a little bit of weight. If you're overweight, then you're going to maybe back down on that starch a little bit and do more of the low-calorie vegetables. But we want to get you so you're full as well. So we still want you to have the potato or the rice or the grains. So look at your plate to make sure that, you know, you have a plan. You know, just like when you exercise, if you go out and you do something mindlessly, you don't get that good of results. So you have to have some thoughts about it and then jot down what that dinner was. And if you enjoyed it, then you have one. And, you know, there was a study done, you know, if people were asked, you know, name three times you were brave. And so they named it. And then they were asked, name six times that you were brave. And they, you know, they named the six. And if you had a hard time coming up with six, then you were more likely to say that you weren't a brave person. But 50% less than people that were able to name three. And the reality of it is that if we're familiar with something and it comes easy to us, then we're more likely to speak of it favorably than if it's very difficult for us to come up with. So if you can name five meals that you eat for dinner that are plant-based right off, then it's a lot easier than someone that just really is going to struggle with what to cook for dinner. You know, I have the people that open up I just open the refrigerator and pull everything out and put everything together. Well, that might not result in the best tasting meal. There may be nutrients missing. You may get bored because you buy the same vegetables over and over and over again. So, you know, mix it up, but check yourself for the color. And, you know, if you're starting out, I think doing foods that are, you know, you can see the sweet potato and you can see the green beans and you can see the zucchini. So you can kind of look at them and assess the nutrients that you have. We do a sauce with cauliflower and potato. Obviously, you have some nitric oxide producing in your cauliflower. It's pureed, so it's not quite as you may not get quite the bump, especially first pass from your mouth. As you will get the nitric oxide for the second, but then if you add in some greens, you're going to get your nitric oxide there. So kind of take an assessment of what nutrients you're trying to get in your system. You know, we know that mushrooms have a tremendous amount of anti-cancer properties. So make sure that those are in your meals several times a week. We know that sweet potatoes help the eyes. You know, so make sure that those are in your rotation, you know, several times a week. So you might want to put do a sweet potato falafel with beans and sweet potatoes. So you got two things covered. So now you're only going to come one more thing. So if you add tabbouleh to that has parsley, nitric oxide producing, tomatoes, again, another color, a little barley, a little lemon juice, vitamin C, along with the tomatoes, you can see how you can get a very nutrient-dense meal without too much trouble. So try to look at your meals and make sure you have, you know, things covered and that you're getting enough calories. I find guys that, you know, aren't getting enough calories, they kind of feel weak or hungry and they're not really satisfied. So make sure you're getting enough. And don't be, lastly, do not be terrified of fruit. Eat your fruit. Enjoy it. I'm enjoying mangoes every day, multiple times a day, and just loving this mango season. So I hope you have a good week. We didn't have our neurology interview this week. It is scheduled for later on in August. So it is coming. So thank you again for listening. Get out and move your body. Look at your plate. Make sure it's colorful, and I'll see you next week.